Hey, well, good evening, everybody. Oh, thank you for that. Hannah, you should have confidence in them that they're going to take out. I really appreciate it. Thank you so, so much. Again, my name is Andrew Wormelskirchen. I go by Worm. I'm our pastor to our children and to their families here. And what that means is that I get to be over a group of zero-year-olds to up to sixth grade, and that means confirmation as well. And I'm just really, really glad to be here tonight. Well, I'm going to tell you about my first car. So I got my first car in between my sophomore and junior year of high school, okay? And this car, let me show you what this car looked like. It was a 1997 Mercury Sable, okay? I paid a whopping $1,000 for this car. It was a car that came with a lot of great features, okay? This car had a lot of great features in it. The driver's side window, this is not my actual car, okay? I couldn't find an actual car of mine, but it was baby blue. It's just to show you, okay? The driver's side window's down in this one. Mine had a feature that the driver's side window did not roll down. I also had every single time I put it into reverse, that the engine would like continue to turn over and make this weird screeching noise, and I have no idea why. I tried to figure it out. Every single time I turned left, the radio would cut out. It was like this ridiculous, this was an absolute piece of junk. And I can't tell you how many hours, I'm not joking you, how many hours I spent with my dad in the garage on this car. I can't tell you how many words that I heard my dad say, like certain words, and how many combinations that he used of those words. I can't tell you how many prayers I prayed just sitting there, God, just whatever we're working on, just please let it work, because I didn't want to be in the garage anymore. This car was an absolute piece of junk. Well, the thing about this car is that every single time something would break down, I would go to my dad and I'd say, hey, can you help me fix this? And you know what he said? He would say, yes. And I feared that he would say this because I didn't want to do this. He would say, yes, I'll help you fix it, but you got to be there right next to me doing this. So we fixed this car, as many times as we possibly can, just trying to fix all the things that were wrong with this. Looking at this just brings back so many memories of hatred, by the way. This car, though, would have problems that would reoccur. And I would go to my dad and I'd say, Dad, I need to help you fix this thing again. Can you help me with this? And he said, no, I've already shown you how to do this. You can do it yourself. So reluctantly, I would go to the auto parts store and I would go get the part, whatever it would be, and I'd go to my garage and I'd fix this. It'd take me a little bit longer and I'd be sitting there just thinking, I hate that I'm doing this, but he showed me the way, and so he was giving me these things. And as much as I hated it, my dad showed me something that I didn't want him to do. He showed me how to take care of a car and how to fix a car on my own. And as much as I hated that he did that, it actually showed some value throughout my college career, because I had no money just trying to get through college and trying to fix my car to get me from point A to point B. He was modeling what it meant to take care of my car and to fix my car. And whenever I think about my ministry here, I try to think back to what my dad did. Am I modeling what it means to be a deeply devoted follower of Jesus Christ? That's a question that like constantly haunts me. Am I showing people how to grow deeper with Jesus? It's a question that constantly haunts me. And I don't know if you have any questions that are like that. If you're a parent, maybe it's, am I modeling my faith for my kids? If you're a grandparent, have I modeled what it means to be the best parent that I could possibly be? If you're a boss and you're in the workforce, maybe it's, am I modeling what it means to give grace to people? I don't know what those questions are for you, but that question about what it is that haunts me, am I helping people become deeply devoted followers of Jesus Christ? Am I modeling what that is like for my congregation? So whenever I first became a Christian, I got to experience a lot of these new things, this love, this joy. It was all new. Think back to the first time that happened for you, and then the first time maybe you were the hands and feet of God, that you served in some type of mission work. And then you're actually seeing God doing something in your life. And one of the reasons why I do what I do is because I want others to experience that. And I've had a lot of people invest in me, and I've had a lot of people take time and energy to get me where I am today. And it always goes back, am I doing what I'm supposed to be doing? And am I helping model this faith for others? And we know that community is important, right? We know that community is this thing that helps us get places. The story that we're going to look at today is a story that shows us how important community is. This story is of Jesus. He's nearing the end of his ministry. and he has his disciples with him. He's speaking in front of a large group of people, and then he's starting to walk off, and these Pharisees, what they try to do is they try to trap Jesus into certain things and use his words against him. But it didn't work, and so he went on from that place, and from that place, that's where our story picks up in Matthew chapter 19. Verses 13 through 15. Verse 13 says this: "Then people brought little children to Jesus for him to place his hands on them and pray for them." Notice this. It says, "Then people brought little children to Jesus for him to place his hands on them and pray for them." It doesn't say then parents. It doesn't say then family members. It says then people. If we dig into the context of this a little bit, it would show us that the community where Jesus is cares a lot about family, cares a lot about the people in their community. The people in their community were probably giving away food to whoever needed food, probably sharing clothes. It doesn't just say parents were bringing these little kids. It was saying the people. And this is really interesting too, but the disciples rebuked them. Out of all the people that were preventing these little children coming to Jesus, I would have never thought it would be the disciples. But the disciples do something here that's really interesting. See, Jesus had been walking with the disciples, and the disciples had been figuring out all the things that Jesus was doing. Something was being modeled for Jesus, for these disciples through Jesus, right? And so he'd seen a lot of people come up to Jesus over the years and try to touch his cloak, try to be healed. And maybe at this one point, Jesus just looked fatigued because he had just got done speaking and he'd just been in this argument with this Pharisee. And so what do these disciples do? Hey, he needs a moment. But Jesus does something important here. Verse 14, it says this: "Jesus said, 'Let the little children come to me and do not hinder them, for the kingdom of heaven belongs to such as these.'" He doesn't look at the disciples and he doesn't say, "Hey, what you just did was bad." But he just simply says, "Hey, let these little children come here. They're invited into this. And in fact, the kingdom of heaven belongs to such as these." That phrase, "such as these," is so significant and so important. Whenever Jesus wanted to use a point and heighten it, what he would do is he would model it and use an example for using kids and women, because kids and women didn't really have a social status in this context. And if you were to actually make a list of people that had social status and put them in order, children may not even be on there. And so Jesus is using this example of this children. He's saying the kingdom of heaven belongs to these kids that such as these. You know what that means, friends? This is good news. Because if there are people that have the kingdom of heaven that belongs to them, and they're not even on this list, it doesn't matter where you are, where you come from, it doesn't matter how much you make, it doesn't matter how much you've done, it doesn't matter how much you have, all that matters is the kingdom of heaven belongs to you, it belongs to me, it belongs to these kids, it belongs to everyone, and everyone's being invited into this. Now, that is important, and that is a radical idea that Jesus has to offer. So, we get to verse 15. What does Jesus do? When he had placed his hands on them, he went on from there. He didn't have this huge like revival. He just placed his hands on them. It was this old Jewish tradition of him blessing these children. He places his hands on them. He blesses them. And then he goes on his way. If I was a disciple in that moment, I'd be stopped in my tracks. It's like driving down Hillcrest and hitting all of the green lights, which never happens, and then getting to Mockingbird and you're like right there, red light, and you're sitting there forever, right? Like that's what happened to the disciples. Like they were just stopped in their tracks. Jesus does something important here. He blesses them. The disciples make this distraction to prevent them from coming just for a moment. But then going back to those people, it was so important for those people to bring those kids to Jesus. And I have to ask myself, why were those people bringing those kids to Jesus? It's kind of like me. Why am I doing what I'm doing? Because I want to model something different for the community that I'm leading. These people were doing the same exact thing. And the thing that was going on in their mind is, if Jesus is worth following, then I have to model something different for these kids. They realized that a faith worth following is a faith worth modeling. They realize that a faith worth following is a faith worth modeling, because if they're going to follow this and they're going to believe it, then they need to model this for the next generation. They need to model this for the people that they're surrounded by. A faith worth following is a faith worth modeling. The community got this. The community got this from the very beginning. I think about one of the things that kind of combat the church and prevent this from happening, from us modeling our faith to others. And I think one of the biggest things that gets in the way is culture. Culture has this like huge stigma that also offers a lot of things that the church offers. The church offers a lot of great things, but culture offers great experiences. Church does that too. Culture offers a community. You can talk to anybody around the world at any time online. The church does that too. But you know the one thing that culture can't do and it won't do that the church can do? Culture cannot do this. The church can place people in the lives of others that have a genuine and authentic care for their faith development. I mean, culture can't do that and won't do that. I mean, the church is so much stronger for that because the church will actually give you somebody, have you be invested in them, and they will allow you to process things. They'll allow you to doubt things. They'll allow you to work out your faith in a very safe way. Culture can't and it won't do that. Culture can't and it won't do that. Whenever I ask people if they will take a step and reach out to others, I always ask, how can you be modeling your faith for others? And I'm going to ask that question for you. How can you be modeling your faith for others? I mean, truly, what would that look like? And a lot of times whenever I'm recruiting people to be a Sunday school teacher or to be in our youth environments, a lot of times I get this response and they say, well, hey, I'm not qualified. I don't know anything about the Bible. I can't expound anything theologically. I don't even look cool enough. Well, here's what I say to them. You could wear a red cardigan, pleated khaki pants, and sing Won't You Be My Neighbor and still make it through to kids and to people. I mean, there are people out there that have these same experiences that you've had. Maybe your experiences could genuinely help the lives of others. I mean, think about it for a second. How can you be modeling your faith for others? How can you be modeling your faith for others? About a month ago, we were in this room for VBS, and we had about 900 kids and 350 youth, adult, and volunteers. I mean, it was just this huge event that we had. And VBS in here, what we do in the mornings, we do have worship, and then right at noon, we'd have another worship to close the ceremony. And there was this girl in the front row over here. She was in first grade. And the entire week, she was getting into it. She was dancing, and she knew every single word to every single song. And I just loved watching her go after God and just trying to learn as much as she could. And near the end of the week, I was going from activity to activity, just checking on a lot of our kids. And her group was going from one place to the other, and she stopped me. This is so cute. She stopped me. She grabbed my hand. She looked up at me, and she goes, "Will you take me to prom?" And my heart just melted. I didn't know what to say, so I'm just like, you need to go on with your class. And I told some of our children's staff that, and we figured out who it was, because I didn't know exactly what her name was, and we figured it out, and one of the staff members, she told me, she said, "I know who that is. In fact, that little girl, she lost her dad whenever she was very young." And I went back to that question that haunts me. Am I modeling my faith that leads people to a deeper relationship with Jesus Christ? Am I modeling my faith that brings light and love to others? I mean, this girl, she came up to me, and I don't know what exactly was going on with her in that moment or that entire week, but was I modeling what it meant to be light and love for her? Was I modeling what it means to be a fun Christian for her? I mean, I didn't have to sit down and do a Bible study with her. I didn't have to sit down and talk to her about God. All I had to do was just model what it means to be light and love to this girl. I called this girl's mom. I told her the story, and she laughed about it, and then she said something. I want every single parent to know. She said, "You have no idea how much the church has meant to me. Because of people like you, my daughter gets to feel welcome and accepted and loved." And you guys, culture can't offer that, but the church can. I think about some of our middle schoolers. I've been in middle school ministry, was in middle school ministry for about 5.5 years. And I think about the overwhelming anxiety that our 6th, 7th, and 8th graders have. I mean, just so much pressure that seems to be getting on them. I mean, think about somebody that could invest in their life and maybe strip that away from them, lead them to a life that is free of that. I think about our high schoolers. Man, I don't know about you, but going through high school, I was just trying to find my purpose in life. And that's what a lot of our high schoolers are doing. They're 9th through 12th grade. They're trying to find their purpose in their life. And I don't know about you, but maybe you've experienced something like that in your adult years. Maybe you can help invest into this next generation. Maybe there's somebody at your work that is missing all those deadlines. And man, it's driving you crazy. But maybe there's something deeper. I don't know what that is for you, but maybe asking them to lunch and just trying to invest in just a little bit of their life. You guys, this community that Jesus was confronted with a long time ago, they were confronted with a community that loved each other. That they were having people literally bringing other people's children to Jesus so that they could be blessed. Because they knew that a faith worth following is a faith worth modeling. I want to go back to that question again. How can you be modeling your faith for those around you? Maybe it's investing into the next generation. Maybe it is taking that person out to dinner. But how can you be modeling your faith to those around you? A few years ago, my wife ran a 10K. And as she was running the 10K, I was going to all these checkpoints to see her and cheer her on, and I wanted to see her cross the finish line. So I got to the finish line a little bit earlier. Nobody had gone through yet, and so I was waiting there for a moment, and then you hear the uproar, you know, like these people cheering. So like the first group of people, they're coming in, and I'm getting set, and I'm looking down at the starting line, and as soon as I see this guy turn the corner, there's this guy in first place. I kid you not, he's pushing a stroller. You know, like one of those intense strollers that has like the bike tires on it. This guy was intense. And he's running, he crosses the finish line, he's the first guy, and I look at the time, it's a great time. He gets down, he looks at his son in the stroller, and the guy's all just smiling, and I was just thinking to myself, oh my gosh, man, this race that he just ran, he just modeled something for his son, and his son isn't even realizing it yet. I want my life to be like that race, standing at the starting line with somebody, trying to figure out where they want to go. But as soon as that gun goes, whatever it is, we start running, and it's going to be hard. Yes, it's going to be hard because there's going to be hills, and getting up that hill is going to be hard. And there's going to be a hill going downward too, right? They might go in front of you, and that's okay because you're going to catch up with them because you're taking the time to invest in them. You're taking whatever it takes to have them have a deeper relationship with Jesus. And then one of you cross the finish line. Man, this would be the dream, right? As soon as you cross the finish line, they get back to the starting line with somebody else to help them go through their faith development. The question that haunts me is, am I making any movement in the lives of people? Am I help modeling what it means to be light and love in this world? Am I helping take kids to grow in a deeper relationship with Jesus Christ? Because I know that a faith worth following is a faith worth modeling. Man, I want to be a generation. I want to be a group of people. I want to be a church that does this for the people that we're surrounded by. So if you don't listen to anything else that I say today, I just want you to remember and take out of here that a faith worth following is a faith worth modeling. Let's pray. God, tonight as we leave this place, I ask that you fill us up with light and love. And God, out of everything that we do this week, just give us opportunities to share our faith with others. Maybe that's taking somebody out for lunch, or maybe that's meeting with somebody a little bit earlier just to see how they're doing. God, whatever that is in the lives of us this week, we just ask that you allow us to be a group of people, to be a church that models a faith, because we know that it's worth following. So God, we pray this in the name of your Son, Jesus Christ, holy and precious in a mighty name. Amen.